Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
Well, Mara, another sad piece of information to share, which is that Catherine Hayes, who played As the World Turns' Kim Hughes, has passed away at the age of 87. Now, for me, Kathy was synonymous with the soap. I mean, if I hear the words kiddo or pal, even to this day, I think of her. Bob and Kim were the it couple of that show, in my opinion, and I was just so sorry to hear the news. You know, she actually lived near to where my parents had a house in Connecticut, and I remember seeing her at the Barnes & Noble years after the show had gone off the air. And despite having worked here for over 20 years by then, I did not go up to her and say anything, because, you know, I sort of feel like when people are out and about, maybe they don't want to be bothered. But we did see some touching tributes online, including from Julianne Moore, who worked closely with Kathy when she played the dual role of Franny and Sabrina, as well as John Wesley Shipp, who played Doug, who was very obsessed with Kim.
Kathy was just such a marvelous actress, and I loved Kim. You know, I started watching As the World Turns around the time that Bob was having his first affair with Susan, played by Marie Masters, and I honestly can remember some of her fantastic performances from that storyline as if I just watched them yesterday. I think we in the daytime community were so lucky to have her as a touchstone and a mainstay for so many decades. And I think that this loss has hit World Turns fans very hard. And I certainly teared up reading what Don Hastings, who played Bob, said about her, which is that in real life, they were like brother and sister and great friends, and that their biggest squabble was, and I quote, "She always wanted to rehearse and I wanted to take a nap."
That's so adorable and great. I just love that. Now, Days fans are in for quite a treat next week as the double wedding of Xander and Gwen and Craig and Leo will play out on screen. Now, we have two factors at play here for Gwen and Xander. It's a question of, will all her lies catch up to her before she walks down the aisle? And despite the fact that Abigail agreed to stand up for Gwen, Abby is actually determined to upend these nups. As for Craig and Leo, we have Chad, Sonny, Brady, and Chloe all working to make sure that they do not become husbands for life. And spoiler alert, Leo will indeed be busted at the altar. Now, I love a double wedding, and I feel this one is going to be full of fireworks, so it's a definite tune-in. Plus, Matthew Ashford and Melissa Reeves will be back as Jack and Jennifer, so there's even more of a reason to watch. And if you need more, we'll see drag performer Jackie Cox again, who you got to speak to for a story in the new issue.
Well, to say that I jumped at the chance to talk to Jackie Cox would be an understatement. I am a huge fan of RuPaul's Drag Race and of Jackie's, and I had such a blast chatting with her. She was so excited to be asked to take part in the network show after her cameo on Beyond Salem, and excited that Jackie was being used for like more than a wink-wink related to her Lisa Rinna impersonation, which was a gag on Beyond Salem. This is the second time I've gotten to interview someone who was a contestant on Drag Race, the first being Manila Luzon, who did a guest gig on GH a few years ago. And I'm always so interested to hear the behind-the-scenes dish on their experience because, unlike other celebs who do cameos on soaps, these performers do their own makeup. So the degree of difficulty of them coming in and handling the pace of working in soaps is even greater because they are also responsible for creating their own look. Jackie said that she was blown away by the performance Greg Rickard gives as Leo over the course of next week's drama, and also teased that she is appearing both in drag and out of drag, and that there is what she called an iconic twist to look forward to in this story.
Oh, there definitely is. Now, there will be plenty of drama across the dial. Over at Young and the Restless, Ashland will finally come clean to Victoria that he never had cancer. Anna and Valentine will reunite on General Hospital. And we're also seeing the fallout continue to play out from Finn's death and Steffi's shooting on Bold and Beautiful, especially now that she's come out of her coma with some compromised memory issues. Now, our guest today is playing an instrumental role in the drama. It's Ashley Jones, who plays Bridget and is back for a longer stay in Los Angeles. So let's check in with her and see how it's all going. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, you guys. I am so excited to be here.
We're so happy to have you. And we're very happy you're back on Bold and Beautiful.
Mm. Oh, thank you. I have to say, I'm actually a fan of this podcast. So when I was asked to participate, I like fangirled a little bit because I've listened to you guys a lot. I think you're very funny and very informative and you have great guests. And I was like, I was a little flattered. Like, wow, I get to be on the Soap Digest podcast. You know,
that's so sweet.
I'm part of the crew. I love it.
Well, let's start. You were born in Memphis, Tennessee, but your family relocated to Texas when you were quite young. So how would you describe your childhood and what were you like as a little girl?
Oh my gosh. Yes, I was born in Tennessee. I was really young, like 5 or 6 when we moved to Houston. And, you know, I was kind of, I don't know if you call it a people pleaser or I really wanted to, I tried to be a good student, a good daughter, and I didn't really cause that many problems in my early youth. That changed a little in my teenage years, but I pretty much started commercials and stuff really young, like right when I got to Houston, auditioned and got it and got a manager and was traveling to do commercials and theater, and it all kind of happened. I was 5 with my first national commercial, and it never really stopped.
But like, how does that happen? Like, how are you 5 years old and you get cast in a commercial? Like, did you express an interest? Were you discovered?
No, someone stopped my parents in a mall. My dad would know this story better and he has a great memory. So he would tell you exactly what mall, but, and just said, you know, we're casting a commercial. And you know, when you're casting kids, even today, I see it on Instagram, open casting. We're looking for a 7-year-old. And they describe, it's like, when you're casting, especially the younger you go, you cast the net wide. And so I went in for an audition and there were tons and tons of kids. I think we waited. I do remember waiting. This is back in the day where your auditions were in like a motel. A little strange. Wouldn't really happen today. But in the hot sun, just waiting in the parking lot. And I came out and I was like, Mom, I think I got it. She goes, honey, you know, there's 100 other people here. So, and they called that night and I had to go back for a call back and I got it. And then that director, and I see now how it works because I'm now directing and I see how it works when directors want, when you start working with someone that you know will show up on time, do their work, know their lines and deliver for you, you tend to use them again. And so we kind of went on a wild ride with that. Mm-hmm. And then I started theater and got an agent and got on a series really young. And and then I joined the soap world very young, Young and the Restless.
At the time when you were 5 and it's just still going, like, how did you know that you wanted to be a performer? And, you know, how did your interest develop in that?
It really, you know, they say something like it's in your blood and it's, you know, you roll your eyes. Like, really? I mean, and it's funny. Today it's like, yes, it's in my blood, but I also need to make a living. I'm a single mom. I want to make money and different things like that. But there is some truth to that. It was just, I knew from the minute I stepped on that set, this was what I was never going to have a regular job. This is just what at 5, I knew that's what I was always going to want to do. And some people get there and they, you know, the kids and my brother tried it a little bit. You don't love it. You don't really want to be without mommy. You don't really, you get tired, your feet hurt, you want snacks. You know, I was just like there, ready to go. Paid attention to the director, was there until that, you know, and they worked me till they couldn't work me anymore. And I was ready to go back the next day for more. I thought the concept of getting to pretend to be somebody else was really fun. And it's still fun.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
It's like the greatest escape to your real life, which makes me sound like I need a lot of therapy, but it's, you know, it's still really, really fun for me.
Okay, so your first couple of TV credits are pretty big deals. Like, you appeared in CBS miniseries Fire Next Time, as well as in the first season of Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. So yeah. We were chatting before we started hitting record, and I found out something fascinating about this miniseries you did. So how did that come about that you, you know, landed a role in such a high-profile production so early on in your foray into the biz? And then you're going to have to share who you might have locked lips with as part of that program.
I was still in Houston at the time, and I joined a theater company and was doing some different things like that. So at this point, it wasn't just commercials anymore. I knew I wanted to do bigger things. And a manager saw me, and I auditioned for, I wish I could remember the name. It's actually a really good movie, Castle Rock Entertainment. I sent in a tape. If I remember later, I can't think of the name. It was a big movie. I was 14, and they said, we're going to screen test you. I didn't even really fully understand what that meant. They flew my mom and me to LA. We stayed in a very fancy hotel in Hollywood. You know, drivers picked me up to go to the screen test and all this. I think I got really nervous, and I didn't do the greatest job on the screen test, but I was out here for 3 days. And I was still young enough to where, you know, now it would have bummed me out to leave thinking, oh, I could have done a better job. When you're young, you just don't know better. You just are like, oh, well, we'll get the next one. And I did. I was out here for 3 days. So my manager, I had a bunch of auditions. One was for Dr. Quinn, one was for the miniseries, one was for something else. And I think it was a Hallmark Hall of Fame movie that was going to be back in Austin. And I booked all of them. And maybe, you know, I think you just don't, I was just too stupid enough to think, I think I thought about it like, someone's going to get it. Why not me? And I'll never forget, they sent me this gorgeous thing of flowers. It was almost as tall as I was at the time. But the flowers arrived late. Castle Rock did. They arrived after I did the screen test. So I saw them and I thought that meant I got the job. Aww. So that was a little bit of a bummer when I realized later I did not. And I wish I could remember the name because it was a really big movie. But anyway, everything happens for a reason. I ended up doing some episodes, quite a few episodes actually, of Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman. And then there were some things that happened and my parents didn't really, let me go back because I started with the miniseries, and the miniseries was fantastic. It was back when CBS did those like $40 million productions, and they were big Sunday night movie of the weeks. And I was playing Craig T. Nelson's daughter. He later became my father-in-law. I had a major crush, puppy love, ended up dating his son, Noah. Very, very, very talented writer, very handsome man. And I got to kiss Paul Rudd for the first time that was my first on-screen kiss, was Paul Rudd. So I had this little crush going on with Noah and then another crush going on with Paul Rudd. So I was very busy. My mind was just, for this little girl, I was very, very, very busy. And Paul was fantastic, very kind, and really kind of took me under his wing in a very brotherly way. But you know, in my little head, I was like, oh, I mean, this is amazing. This is, we're gonna be together someday. Anyway, so that was that. And then I did Dr. Quinn, and it just was, I think it was very difficult on my parents for me to be in LA so much, and they were still raising my siblings. And I got a little bit of, what do you call it? I guess the word would be too big for my britches. And I said some things to my mom that I shouldn't have said. And my mom reminded me that I was still a child and she was not done raising me yet. And she took me off the show.
Wow.
Took me off Dr. Quinn. And Beth Sullivan was the executive producer at the time, the showrunner, very upset, called me in. I'm very upset. It was a very big deal, very traumatic for me emotionally. I was mortified. And I had to come home, and they did not want me to do to act until I was old enough to do it on my own. They really wanted me to focus on, they just thought I was getting a little out of hand. Mm-hmm. And a little out of hand for my parents was not very much out of hand, but it was, you know, they weren't wrong. And now that I'm a parent, I'm like 100% they did the right thing. But it didn't feel that way at the time.
Sure.
And but then what did I do the day I graduated from high school? I came back to LA as soon as I possibly could, got an agent and booked two movies a week, and then got on Young and the Restless. So they only could keep me away from it for so long.
That's amazing.
But they tried. They tried very, very hard. And of course, now they're incredibly supportive, and I hope they're watching Bold and Beautiful today. They don't really care what I'm, what I'm on, but and my son could care less. And my brother and sister, I have to remind them. I'm like, can you guys tune in? Your viewer, it matters. Viewers matter. But at the time, it was, like, oh, you're leaving home and you're going to Hollywood and you're going to be on a soap opera and kissing men. And, it's a lot for your child.
Sure. But wait, did you ever, I imagine, had a connection or an opportunity to talk to Orson Bean through Allie Mills, at some point?
I did. I had a pretty strong connection with him, actually. So when I later in life connected with Allie, we really bonded over that. And Orson is a brilliant man, was a brilliant man, and a brilliant comedian. Very, very, very funny. His humor was a little over my head, if that makes sense. He was, he had adult humor, but I just knew he was funny because everyone was always laughing at him. But he was the kindest man. You really felt like you were related to him. And I feel the same way about Allie. And Allie, I could show up on her doorstep right now, wouldn't even call, knock, and she'd be like, oh my gosh, come in, I just made some tea, do you want lunch? Let's go sit by the canal, so good to see you. And then we would share stories about Orson and her kids and grandkids, and it is one of those connections that, when you especially when you're working on set long hours and you're young, it's a connection that really never ever wanes. And I've had the honor of working with some really amazing. I got to work with Richard Farnsworth, the Academy Award winner. I think he was a winner. I think he was. I played his granddaughter on Fire Next Time. That miniseries meant a lot to me and really paved the way, mainly because I married Noah, but really paved the way for the trajectory of my life. And a lot of projects do that. So. Mm-hmm.
I was a big Dr. Quinn fan, so of course I had to ask.
And Jane, I've reconnected with Jane now. We connect, we talk a little bit. I've been to some of her events. We're both on TVSN in Australia. It's like the QVC of Australia. And I've seen her. She's lovely. And we like each other's posts on Instagram and things like that.
And Jolando was on B&B a few years ago.
Yes. I mean, it's really a much smaller world than you realize until you get older, and just everything keeps coming full circle.
Right.
It's pretty neat. All right. So as you mentioned, you first came to the attention of the daytime audience in 1997 when you were cast as Megan Dennison on YNR. So tell us your YNR casting story, because I'm particularly interested if you knew anything about soaps going in and had any concept of what you were getting yourself into.
I'm sure I've said this in many Soap Digest articles over the last 20, what? I don't even want to say how many years. But I was at Pepperdine. I did go to Pepperdine, which made my parents feel much better about letting me come back to LA. But I was in school. I didn't stay in school. I mean, I did graduate. I stayed in school, but I was working the whole time I was in school. But I get this audition, and I had to borrow a friend's car, I think. I'm pretty sure. I borrowed a friend's car. But the audition was at Fairfax and Beverly. I'm way down in Malibu on PCH. And the audition's they want me there 7:15 in the morning. And I'm thinking, I have to leave at 6:15. I wake up. It's pitch black. It's pouring rain, and I need to tell them I'm going to run. The 10 was just bad. LA, well, you guys aren't here, but you've all been here. In LA, if it rains, it's like the world comes to an end. No one knows how to drive in the rain. It's not like any other place in the world that people know how to, they just go so slowly and there's crashes. It's just whatever. So I call my manager or agent and they don't pick up because it's 6:15 in the morning. And And that was back when I just got a cell phone. The cell phones were huge and you had to keep charging it. And I had a pager and I had to pull over on the side of the road. And I called the number on my little audition call sheet and I got connected to the main desk at CBS. So then I had to ask for Young and the Restless casting. And anyway, I finally get to Marnie and Marnie answers the phone. She was the casting director or one of the people there at the time. And she said, don't worry, honey, take your time. Don't get in a rack. It's fine. We're all going to be here. It's okay. She calmed me down. So I get there. There are so many people auditioning for this role. There were people sitting in the hallway. They all look up. They're all these beautiful girls. I'm like, what am I doing here? But I go in and Bill's there, Brad Bell's father. And he just chats. "Why? How are you?" Like, just chats. And then we do the scene, and we just kept chatting. And I felt so comfortable and calm, and I left, and I got the role. So I knew nothing about soaps other than I grew up watching All My Children and was in love with Peter Bergman, Cliff. And I got very sweaty palms. I was like, I'm sweating. My whole body got sweaty when I sat in the makeup chair next to Peter on Young and the Restless. And I couldn't quite get the words out and finally had to tell him later. And now it's funny. But do you guys remember Cliff and Nina?
Of course.
I mean, yes. I thought they were so cool. I thought she was so gorgeous. I just thought she was the best.
Yes,
and then
that's
we also watched General Hospital, which is hilarious because I grew up watching Jack Wagner on Frisco.
And me too.
Frisco and Felicia were amazing. And so, yeah, so but my first real celebrity reaction was to Peter Bergman.
That's amazing. Well, what do you remember about the early days of Y&R and just kind of
being part
of that company?
I was a little intimidated by everyone, especially Heather Tom. I thought Heather was so cool, and she seemed really like she was so professional and good. And I don't know if she'd already won Emmys, but like she was about to win 100 or whatever. So you could just feel it. And we are super close now. I adore her and would let her keep Hayden for the weekend and all. But at the time, like, she didn't really give me that much attention. It's made me want more attention from her. But I got really close to my sister on the show, Sabre and Janae. Mm-hmm. And we to this day, we still call each other sister. We were very, very, very close. And she was an enormous support for me. So was Laura Lee Bell and Jennifer Garys. Sharon was lovely. So was Heather. They were all amazing. And I just was kind of this, and I was a younger girl. I wasn't like a cool 18-year-old. I was like kind of a dorky, younger version of that. And they were very, Shamar Moore was so lovely. Eric Braden. And I just loved, and then Jess played kind of my stepmom and loved hanging out with her. The thing about soaps is they become your family, especially when you're young. They really do become your family. And Ed Scott, I looked up to him in ways that I can never explain. He was such a mentor for me and really pushed me and helped me become a better actor and helped me get nominated for Emmys. And then here we are full circle later, hanging out again. And it's very, very, very cool. And when you know someone that long, like the way Ed knows Jennifer Garys and Heather Tom and me, and like literally we were kids, Heather was a child for all intents and purposes when she started. He can talk to us in ways that like no one else can really understand. And so it's a really special, when people say like, "Oh, do you like being back at B&B?" It's so hard to explain. It's not like, "Oh no, it's super fun." It's so much more than that. It's like, I get to go
it's
be
deeper.
With
deeper. It's a deeper bond.
It's incredibly, right? Yes. Now. This goes back to when I was a teenager. So I grew up with the Bell family. And to still feel like they're inviting me to come play with them is an honor. I'll never outgrow that. Most people won't. It's so amazing and special. And I learned so many life lessons on these shows. And then, I got to like test for Days of Our Lives and get to know that crew for a little bit. Didn't get it, but I've tested a couple of times for them. But then I got to play with the crew at GH, and the soap world is just a very, very special world. I never did a New York show, but I spent a lot of time in New York because that's where all the fun parties were.
Yeah.
And I had friends that were going to school out there at the time. So I would go, if we were on hiatus or something, I would go and spend like a month in New York. And I thought, I've never felt cooler than getting to hang out in New York and go to these parties and go to the Rainbow Room and have interviews with Soap Digest. For like an early girl in her 20s, it was very cool.
Also, those Rainbow Room parties were just so over the top and epic and unbelievable. Like, it was such a different time when you came into soaps. There was more money. There was more hoopla.
It was a very, very special fancy deal. And they put on a show and, designers would dress us. I mean, that all can still happen. It's just it's a different feel now. And then on top of it, just COVID. Now we're still coming, crawling out of the pandemic. And last night was my first premiere. I went to the Flight Attendant season 2 premiere. It was the first premiere I've been to since the pandemic. That's been so long. We used to do this stuff all the time.
Right.
And so I hope we get back there. But my goodness, the protocol to get to that premiere, the amount of vaccination proofs and COVID tests and, you know, identification while you're, and then security to get through and all of that, because we just have to all stay safe.
But let's plug it. Good. Was it a good premiere? Season two is going to be as great as season one.
This is my best friend. I adore the Cuoco family, and she is so fantastic. You guys, this is what I'll say. I won't give anything away. The whole premiere was the first episode. I felt like it was 15 minutes. It went by so fast. All I wanted was more. Everyone kept looking around like, we don't get the second episode. It's so good. You don't even, if you have to pee, you won't pee. You'll just sit there and watch the whole thing, because it's that kind of show. I think everyone will love it. It's a very fun ride. It's a very specific niche because it's a little dark comedy. It's thriller. And she's just, I mean, she's one of a kind. She's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, this is on a very different note, but as I'm going through your like endless list of credits, basically, there is a title that jumped out at me because it's one of my favorite movies, and that is Old School. So tell us what your experience on the set of Old School was.
The cool thing was getting to hang out with Will Ferrell and Vince Vaughn and Luke Wilson and Todd Phillips. They were all, it was just a very, very, very cool thing. My role got cut down. I had a bigger role, and actually had some scenes with Breckenmeyer, more scenes with Will. And you know, that's what happens when you do a film. Now that I've directed, you have so many minutes of great footage and you have to turn in 32 less minutes. So stuff has to go. But my point in saying that is I'm not in the movie that much, but I worked on the set a long time. I was there for like 3 weeks, and then I had to go back and do some reshoots and stuff. And the one thing I noticed about Will was he's actually really, at least around me, he was really a private person, and isn't like this, the thing we think of him, the Saturday Night Live star. He was actually quite quiet, and he's very, very funny, very dry. He's not even trying to be funny, but you can't, he's just so funny. But it's not a show. Like, he's a very real person. And I met, I think his dad was visiting. He was just lovely. And I had a lot of fun with that. It was I'd been on some pretty big budget productions, but that was probably my biggest budget feature film. And I met Perry Reeves, who played Will Ferrell's wife. Later, she became a very good friend. I just got to learn from a lot of people because I was in some of the bigger scenes with a lot of, you know, Luke was amazing. Luke felt like you had known him your entire life. He was so humble. He did not act like he was any more special than anyone else on the set. And Vince is just, he just breathes and you laugh. I don't know how to explain it. I find that kind of talent that just oozes out of you, I find very, it's just infectious. You want to be around it. And my girlfriend, Kaylee, we were just talking about, she did, Curb Your Enthusiasm with Vince. And all these years later, it's like the same, everyone that's worked with him says the same thing. So it was a great experience for me.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, also tell us just about leaving Y&R and what your feelings were about that.
That was very, very, very hard for me. They gave me a cake on set, and I still have all these pictures, Sabrin and Scott Reeves and Ed Scott and Laura Lee, all the crew. And what's amazing is some of those crew members went over to Bold and Beautiful, so I still get to hang out with them now. But I left, and you know, like a lot of soap people do, when you think you want to leave and go do other things. And my storyline was kind of waning, but I think they would have probably kept me, but was kind of a mutual decision. It's so lovely. They'll have come back a little bit, you know, if they have something in the storyline. So I did. And then I just, I kept pretty busy doing other things, I don't even remember. I'd have to go look at my resume, episodic and movie of the weeks and Old School. And
I feel like what show weren't you in?
Yeah. 100%. I did, you know, I have been lucky. I've never hit, I'm one of those people that I'm the real definition of a working actor. I've never had to do anything else, but it's not like I ever hit in a way that I was this big star, other than I will say, I think the soap world, I feel very, very grateful for the roles I've been able to play. But yeah, I've been able to work a lot, and then we got the call for Bold and Beautiful.
How did that hit you? You know, like, had you thought of, you know, had it been that many years since you've done Y&R, but obviously B&B, a great opportunity in and of itself.
Yeah. And I remember there was some talk about it, you know, your agents and your manager like say something. And I ran into Adrienne Franz at a party, and she said, you should 100% come to Bold and Beautiful if you can. And I was like, really? It's only a half hour. You know, in the soap world, we kind of were like, it's a half hour show. We used to say that all the time. And I was like, now I'm like, what? what weirdo would say that? That's better. It's like, what? I was like, but it's only half an hour. And I'm on an hour, you know, I was on an hour drama. So
I'm an hour girl, you know?
And he was like, you need to go home and look up Bold and the Beautiful and see how many people watch it every day and see how many countries we're in. And we're the number one serial. I mean, she gave me the whole like little PR thing.
Good for her.
And she's like, if you get the opportunity to be on the show, you should be so lucky. I mean, those weren't her words. I adore Adrian. She wasn't being snobby at all. She was saying, what's wrong?
Matter of fact. Yeah.
Go and look at it. And if Adrian ever listens to this or if a fan tweets something we say, congratulate. Adrian just had a little baby.
A baby.
I'm so happy for her. Her little family is amazing. So then when it did come up, I was asked to send some stuff that I'd been in to Brad. And I'm like, well, doesn't he want to meet me? They're like, no, he saw you at a party recently. I'm like, I didn't talk to him. I'm like, well, he saw you. So he knows what you look like. And we sent some tape and the offer came in pretty quickly. And he said, well, you worked for my father. I know that. And we want to keep you in the family and we want to bring you in. This is a very beloved character. And by the way, you need to dye your hair blonde. I was like, oh, everything sounds great, but not the blonde part. I was like, no. And my agent's like, Ashley, just go dye your hair blonde. And I had this really dark, I mean, even when I kind of sort of went lighter, it was still like a, almost like your color, Stephanie, not blonde on any level. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I set up, my agent's like, well, I'll go with you. We'll do it. So we did it and my hair turned out orange and I was devastated. And I remember he took me out that night for dinner and I was crying. I'm like, I'm going back to a half hour soap with orange hair. I was so like, just like, what am I doing? How did I, this is not where I wanted to be at this time in my life. By the way, I was like 27. Like, yeah. I'm not going to go back and be a baby crying over getting a huge job and my whole life changing. So it took a second to figure out how to make my hair a prettier blonde. It took like 3 years, to be honest. I used to get notes in back when we could all go up to the office and stuff before the pandemic. We would have little boxes and that's where our fan mail would come and our scripts sometimes. And maybe PAs would bring it down to our room. But then we would have these little slips and it would be notes from the producers if we needed something. Most people didn't get notes. But Heather would get some notes sometimes. But usually it was like, can you clean your room? Or things like that. And mine were always, hey, your roots, can you go get your roots fixed? Can we look at the tone of your hair? And then finally they're like, we'll pay for it. We just need you to go fix your hair. And I it would always take so long and have to sit still and go somewhere in Beverly Hills. And again, I realize I sound like I'm complaining because I am. But we finally figured out the right blonde. And then I pretty much have kept it. I went back to brunette for a small period of time. And the first job I got was Bones and they wanted me blonde. And so I'm like, okay, maybe I'll just stick to blonde. But that was my first, foray back to the soap world. And I will never forget my first day. I was working with Kelly and she hugged me and said, I'm so excited to have my daughter back. And I had to cry. Of course, it's a soap. And I was like, oh, I didn't know you had time to cry on a half hour show, but you do. I would cry more than I've ever cried in my whole life. Bridget, poor Bridget. I mean, good grief. She had such a fun journey. She had a lot of highs and a lot of lows. But Kelly has this amazing ability, and I bet anyone that you've talked to that's worked with Kelly, I'm talking about Catherine Kelly Lang, who plays Brooke. You work with her, and if you really are focused and present in the moment, you will cry because she's just that good. There's a couple people I've worked with that are just really, Susan Flannery is that, I mean, there's a lot of people that are that good, but to this day, if I do a scene with Kelly and I'm supposed to cry, I don't even have to work. It just, I cry. And we also are very close and have a very close connection. And, I felt like, oh, okay, I think I can do this. I think I can play this character. And it took a second for me to get my footing. And I really think what I was doing wrong is I was trying to do what the fans wanted. They wanted Jennifer Finnegan back. Who wouldn't? Jennifer Finnegan. She won these Emmys. She had these fantastic storylines. She's one of the greatest people we will ever meet. And I was trying to make it my own, but I think subconsciously I was trying to do what I thought that she would do if she came back. So I had to give all that up and just find my own version of her. And then that's what really ended up sticking.
Well, you told us about your TV mom. Tell us about your TV dad, played by Jama Cook.
Oh my gosh. I literally call him dad. John, Again, if you have like a little Bold and the Beautiful repertoire and you go and look at these podcasts, everyone that's ever talked about John will say, oh, he took me under his wing. He invited me into his dressing room. He sat me down and had a talk. And his dressing room is like an open door policy. And it's the coolest room we have, in my opinion. Leather chairs, all this fun old Hollywood memorabilia of all the things he's been in, lights. And it's just a very cool room. And it's right off the set, so it's easy access. And I mean, he invites a bunch of people in whenever they want to come and run lines or whatever. And so I got that invitation and he sat down and said, I'm your dad. I'm here. Here's my number. Let me know what you need. Let me know how you feel. If anyone bothers you, you come to me. I mean, it was just like, and that's how he's always set that tone. And it's not, I thought it was me. I felt so special. And then everyone else that came on, they're like, oh my gosh, John McCook's amazing. He invited me into his, I sat on that leather sofa. I'm like, oh, he's just that nice. And now I'm like really, really friendly with Molly and his, you know, his daughter and his son and Lorette and part of the family. And yeah, so every time I get to have scenes with him, they're always really fun. And I was sworn to secrecy that I would not do, I could tease, but could not reveal, but I'm hoping, I have a lot of hope that I get to have scenes with him soon. So
okay,
fingers crossed. Yes.
So do we.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Well, during your first run on the show, Bridget married Nick, not once, not twice, but three times.
Those are the ones that worked.
Yes.
We went down the aisle, I think five.
You're right. Right. Okay. So I was going to ask, like, tell us about working with Jack Wagner, but now we have to put a very special Ashley Jones spin on the question, which is tell us about working with Jack Wagner, having been a Frisco fan.
Oh, yes. I was old enough to have watched Melrose Place and things like that. So I was aware. But, you know, Jack is specific. So when you meet him, he's very, like, it was a little, like, I was a little intimidated, but that didn't last that long. And then it was very easy. He's a very easy actor to work. I mean, for me, it was easy to work with him. We had a real honest connection. And there were just some really great storylines the writers wrote for us. Like, it was this, you know, the triangle they did with Brooke and Nick was pretty epic and really fun. And we got to, you know, all travel together and do, it was just a really special time. Again, we were talking about that, Stephanie, when soaps had more money and it was a little bit more, I think we're coming, maybe Bold and Beautiful's kind of coming back or hoping to have ideas for certain things, but it was a really special time to be a part of the show.
Well, Bridget also had a fling with Owen, played by Brandon Beamer, who's now back on Days of Sean. So what was it like to work with him?
Brandon is like, if I saw him today, we would sit down and could talk for 5 hours. We're like brother and sister. I love that guy. He's one of the most beautiful people to stare at. Really, really just a gorgeous specimen of a human being. And his eyes are gorgeous. And he was a great actor, and he always was willing to work. He would work on the scenes as much and long as I was willing to do it. And we had a really good go at it. And really, you know, I loved working with him. And honestly, one of my craziest, outside of True Blood, one of my craziest bedroom scenes is with Brandon. And you know, what's so funny is with us, it was like, I can't explain it. It was like, oh, I'm doing the scene with Brandon. And so Brandon's like, well, can you do, you know, put your leg here, do that. It was just all just like, I don't know. We didn't even think about it. I'm like, oh, it looks better if I just don't, if I pull it, whatever. And then when I saw it on screen, I'm like, oh my gosh. We look like we're naked, you know, oh my gosh. But at the time I don't know how to explain it. It just was like, it's what we, Brandon and I, knew how to do together. It was but it wasn't like a sexual thing. I don't know how to explain it. I mean, I do, because every other actor in the world would say the same thing, but it's one of those things where it really did feel like a certain thing. And then when you saw it, you're like, oh my, was I wearing any clothes? Yes, by the way, for the record, I was wearing clothes, but the way they filmed it was very, so we had, you know, Bridget and Owen had a fun fling, and then a baby came out of it. So
yeah.
A lot of fans are asking if we're going to see this baby. So the funny thing about fans and Twitter and all this access we have, which is so great, but they can ask us questions as if we know the answers. Like, oh, well, you know what? That's a great idea. Let me go put that in the script for next week. It's like, I have a job and my, you know, and I think I have to remind them sometimes. I love that idea. I would love to have scenes with my now probably teenage son, but
I was just going to say, not a bit, and I would not be a baby in real time. So in soap time, you know,
he's probably 17, 18. I mean, he could even be 21, you know. He would be whatever would be appropriate for the show and would create a good storyline. He would be that age. And I actually really feel confident that at some point they'll do that. It's so up to the puzzle. I've said this several times on, you know, quoted, being quoted saying, it's like a puzzle, and it's not up to, I have a job that I'm supposed to do while I'm there, and I should do my job the best that I can and collaborate about my character to an extent, but I have to let the head writer and the creator and the, let them all do their job, and I never know what they're going to do and when they're going to think, and whenever it comes up, it'll be the right time, but it could be never, it could be 10 years, it could be this summer.
Mm-hmm. So, all right, you mentioned some steamy bedroom scenes that you did on True Blood, and I think that you actually started shooting or did your entire arc of True Blood while you were also on The Bold and the Beautiful. Is that where you?
Yeah, I did.
My goodness,
that was a huge thing to get permission to do, and a lot of stuff. When people are, you know, I would have never known this if I wasn't in the business, but different studios and networks are owned by different corporations, and Viacom is not owned, but, you know, anyway, it was a little pickle to kind of work out that, to make it all work, but we did. So it was basically like being a series regular on two different things at the same time on different networks owned by different parent companies. And I was literally doing Bold and the Beautiful during the day, and there was more than a handful of times that I would leave set as soon as I could. And they were kind enough to like move the scenes up so I could leave immediately. And I would drive over to the lot or Universal or back Malibu Ranch or wherever we were shooting. And they would like, oh, your makeup looks pretty good. We're just going to touch you up. And they would just fix my hair, maybe add a little bronzer. And I would go right on set and work till like 4 a.m. and then be back at B&B the next morning for my scenes there. And I got strep throat 4 times when I get sick, it goes to my throat. So, I was single at the time and didn't have children, and it was kind of, looking back, I don't know if I would do it all over again. Now I have a 5-year-old, but it was, such an exciting, fun time. And I had this crazy storyline with Brandon Beamer, who was the perfect person to be doing that with because he was so patient and helpful. And it was like, I literally remember coming into work and I'm like, don't they know I was up all night? How are we doing 80 pages today? Like, is no one helping me try to get through it? And no one's helping them. I should be so lucky. So we got through it, and it was a really good run. It was really fun to do True Blood. No, it wasn't always that. I'm giving you the 5 worst case, you know, scenarios of the days. But in many days, I would only go to Bold and Beautiful, and I wouldn't work on True Blood for that week. And it worked out very, very seamlessly. But there were times where I was sweating in the car, feeling like I was going to throw up because we went over on Bold and Beautiful, and my priority was Bold and Beautiful. CBS did own me, or Viacom. And then we go to, you know, I had second position of HBO, and then they would be waiting, not pleased, because I'm running late. But you know, it's one of those things, it's a lot of it's control and funny. Like, by the time I would get there and get ready, I would wait on them for 5 hours. So it all ended up working out fine. And I don't think any of the performances ever, actually, they probably, when an actor gets out of their head, it's almost sometimes better. I didn't have time to overthink. So it was just kind of being in the moment.
Right. Well, your character, Daphne, met a very gruesome end. So what do you remember about filming her demise?
Oh, that's the perfect word. It was gruesome. And it was also so, we didn't always know every single scene at the episode. They didn't really want us to know because they wanted us to play, you know. And sometimes the episodes would overlap and then you would get them. But when I found out, I was really like sad because I had so much fun there. But I had an idea that that was going to be the arc of the character. But then filming that, it was just kind of creepy. It was really, it was dark in the middle of the night. And, you know, we had to do this pretend knife and me and all this stuff. And then I kept working on the show. They kept having me in a freezer with my heart out, and I had to sit there. So I would be on the show dead. And I've been wanting to post this every Halloween, and every Halloween I post, I like pull it up. I'm like, it's too gross for my, now that I have like a mom audience with kids that look at my Instagram, it's literally, it's a little horrific. They pulled my heart out, and they had to do this whole, I had to go to this someplace in the deep valley and get a cast put over my entire body. So then they make your whole body this silicone thing, and then they lay it over and they smooth it out and glue it to your body. So it's literally like, it looks just like your body. It's weird, like your breasts and everything. Then you get dressed, then they cut it open and pull it open and do all the makeup artist does everything. And they make it look like it's fresh skin that's just been open. And it looks like, honestly, it looks like Sloppy Joe's, because they like, and that's what they basically did to my heart. They made ground meat out of my heart and ate it. God. Yeah, no, it's gross.
Yeah.
I didn't come up with that. That was somebody else's thought. But so by the time, you know, you digest it and you film it and then you're still there and it's like, okay, well, this character's definitely dead. She's not coming back. And you, and that is kind of the hard thing about being an actor on the, like doing a movie or doing these arcs on shows, that you get close to these people and then you're done. And then you move on. And then 20 years later, you get to work with them again because it's such a small world and it all comes full circle and it's fun.
Well, you left B&B in 2010, but you started making these like fairly regular returns after not, you know, that long away from the show. Did that surprise you that the show had something of an open door and kind of, you know, kept inviting you back and finding opportunities to work Bridget into trips to LA and so forth?
It didn't surprise me because we really left on like a kind of an open-ended note. I think that they were moving on in storyline, but also I was working so much. Right after True Blood, I did something, I can't remember, but I was constantly working, and I think that was a little annoying for them. But it wasn't like they wanted to get rid of me, but it was also just like they weren't going to really write. I mean, it was one of those things. So it didn't surprise me to keep coming back. But then it was like, okay, you're only going to bring Bridget back for Christmas or weddings or funerals. And then it almost became, if the fans knew Bridget was coming back, they started saying, oh, someone's dead or married. And then they tried to figure out storyline. And so it was, you know, but it was lovely. They did invite me back often. I don't think there's been 1 year that I haven't, I could be mistaken, but I don't think there's even been, I mean, I might've only done 2 or 3 shows that year, but then I would come back and do little things here and there. And then we had like this fun little project going on during the pandemic, kind of a behind the scenes thing that I don't know what we're going to ever do with that. But I would come back for that. And then they were lovely. They brought me back in 2015. And I think I really do go looking back. I think there was a slight storyline that was developing there. And I just had to announce that I was pregnant. And not by any means did they not continue the storyline because I was pregnant, but I think it was just like, let's see what we can do here. I was not under contract. Nothing had been written. I might be flattering myself to think that they were even going to do more, but I was. So I did a little bit before Christmas. When I came back after the Christmas break, I was bigger because that's what happens when you're 5 and a half months pregnant and then you get to 6 months and you pop. And I was trying to really not let people know. I mean, I had to tell the writers, but I wasn't really announcing, but it was pretty obvious. I mean, I remember seeing John McCook and he was like, oh my gosh, what happened to you? Are you pregnant? I'm like, John, how did you know? He's like, how did I know? Look at you. I'm like, and then right about that exact time, GH called and didn't seem to care.
Mm-hmm. They knew I was pregnant.
And I was working on GH till I was almost 8 months pregnant. And then I went back 3 weeks to the day after Hayden was born. I really don't know why I agreed to do that. But they were like, oh, you're pregnant. That's fantastic. That's totally fine. So how quickly can you get back after you give birth? It was like, it just didn't faze Frank at all. He didn't care, which thank God, God bless him. He was, you know, lovely about it. And not that Bold and Beautiful wasn't. It was just like they weren't necessarily putting me in the scripts and GH did. So I went to GH and did that little thing. And that was very interesting, very different, and a really great experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that show, you played Parker Forsyth, a professor who got romantically involved with one of her students, Lexi Ainsworth's Christina. So this couple developed a really passionate fan base pretty quickly. What did you think about that? And were you surprised by that?
I was extremely surprised by that because they brought me on for like 4 episodes and then they just kept writing and writing and writing and writing. And I wasn't really active on Twitter at the time. And honestly, I was like really pregnant and I wasn't even that active on social media at all. So I remember Lexi was like, have you been on Twitter? I was like, no, why? She goes, just go on Twitter. And she said that, or maybe I'm putting words in her mouth. Maybe it was they hired a social media, someone, it was one of their marketing people. And I'd never, ever seen so much interaction from any character I've ever played. And to this day, if we went on Twitter today, we could look. I have not been on Twitter today, but it happens every day, so I don't know why it wouldn't happen today. There are fans that ask, hey, Ashley, have you heard from General Hospital? And that is amazing. And it taught me two things. One, General Hospital has insane fans. They really have an insane fan base. And two, General Hospital tapped into something that really meant a lot to people. I think it went way beyond me. And I adore Lexi, and I think Lexi is a fantastic actress, but I think it went way beyond Lexi. I think they tapped into something, and it really resonated with people for many different reasons. And to this day, it still resonates with people. But I don't think they're writing for Parker. I say that often. I'm like, no, I haven't heard from GH. Don't think I'm going to. It wouldn't be. I wouldn't. I mean, it could. Parker was a teacher. She went head to head with Nancy Legrand. I think it'd be a great time to. I mean, at any point in time, they could bring her back for something. You know, who knows? But I don't see them doing that. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's disappointing. So after General Hospital, you did a 2-episode arc on one of Stephanie's favorite shows, Major Crimes. What was your experience on that show like?
I got cut out of that show a little bit too, but I really wanted to be on that show because it was one of my favorite shows. And they'd been trying to get me on and it didn't work and whatever. And I love the cast. I love all the people, the showrunner and everything. But and I'm still friendly with some of the actors. It's just a great group of people. But it was like the last 2 episodes ever or something. And they said, okay, let's bring you in. And the crazy, crazy, crazy thing is I get there and Lexi's on the episode. I'm sure you guys figured that out. We're not in the same storyline. But what kind of coincidence, you know? So that was really fun. And it was a really cool little character I got to play. And it's already aired, so I can say she died, which was a bummer, but the show was ending. So that was, it's, you know, all these little things that I've been able to do are, and getting to meet new people and seeing how directors work and their vision. And I was going through a lot in my personal life at that time. And so it was really such a, it was like a little haven to get to go to be, it was like a good month's worth of work, even though I was not in that much of it. That's just how TV works sometimes. And so it was that was a special time for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I mentioned earlier, you know, what show haven't you been on? Yeah. I mean, you did House. Yes, Bones.
There's been many. I can give you a long list if anyone wants to, if any showrunners out there want to hear. I'm constantly, whatever, we'll talk about it later, but there's different, there are plenty of shows out there that are on my list and we'll get to them hopefully.
Well, do you have a favorite primetime show that you were able to be a guest on?
That's a good question. I mean, True Blood was one of them. That was more of a pretty long arc. But a guest, you know, it's funny. I wish I could say it right now. It's a show. It's a medical drama on Fox. That probably gives it away. But I'm really, really, it's a fantastic guest star. Really well written. And I'm doing that right now. And I'm working with some people that I grew up watching when I was little, like on shows, and I'm a little bit of a fangirl. I haven't told them that because I have to do all these scenes with them, and so had to be cool. But I was a little bit freaking out. It's a great cast, and I'm obsessed with this director. It's what I'm currently doing in Atlanta, and it's really, so that's kind of cool when you do get to be on a show that you've been watching. The show that I keep
watched
getting
that show, and I'm okay. Super psyched then because I know exactly what show you mean.
It's a great guest star. It's okay. A really, really great guest star. I'm so excited. But just the way that luck would have it, I've been on hold, almost the choice, not the choice, got the role, conflicted. I went back to Bold and Beautiful, couldn't do it. I mean, so many times for Grey's Anatomy, I can't tell you. And because I am most people that have ever been alive have watched some of Grey's Anatomy because it's now been on for all of eternity and will hopefully never leave because we love that family, that, you know, we love it so much. But I was going to maybe do that the same time I was doing this, but you can't do everything. And So we'll see if something happens and it turns back around. But so that would be a show I would you know, but there's other, you know, all these little limited series that are out right now, you know, they're already done and they drop the whole thing. But I will say this again, it's like frustrating because I can't say, and I think I signed an NDA until they tell me I can, but there is something on Apple TV coming this summer. And I loved this guest star. Very, very, very cool role. And I guess I can only say that, but it's exciting. I'll tell you guys when we get off the recording. It's very cool.
No, you won't. You signed an NDA. We should know that.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Never mind. I'm not saying anything. So, yeah.
Well, it came as welcome news, as we mentioned, to BNP fans that Bridget is indeed back in action and that her current stay in LA is more than just a quick visit. So were you excited that that was the case? And how did you find out that Bridget was wanted to be back in the mix?
I'll be honest, I almost didn't believe it. So I was like, oh, it's probably again. You know, I'm like, I will always come back. I love it. If I'm in town, I'll do it. But I really did expect it to be like one or two episodes. Then when the scripts just kept coming in and kept coming in, and I was like, I didn't ask how many episodes. I didn't say. All I kept saying was, I'll clear my schedule. And then, of course, I was like, oh, Gray's called? Okay, I will still clear my schedule. That was a little, because this is the third time this year that we've tried to do Gray's. But it really meant so much to me. I don't even know if Brad knows that. It meant so much to me that they were trying to fit me in that I will always honor that. I thought it was very cool of them to do. And I think it's very fun. It's such a cool dynamic to have the doctor there that is basically related to every single person in the room. And so there's just, if you want to go deep, you can, because there's so many relationships. And you know, it is hard for the director. And again, we're going to bring this back. It's a half hour show. So you can't do, you know, of course, what I love to like have all these deep reactions, like when Bridget, now that it's aired, I can talk about it. When Bridget first saw that it was Steffi that was shot, I mean, you could have Bridget, the girl, Bridget, that grew up with Steffi as her little sister, that reaction, but you don't have enough time to do all this stuff. And you just have to go into like, she has to go into professional doctor mode. She's been shot. Let's go, you know, alert the OR, blah, 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 blah. But in my mind, I had, you know, and then Ridge comes in and the history between Bridget and Ridge. And of course her mother. And then we know about Deacon and all, I mean, Hope, every single person that walks in, Liam, we all have this enormous amount of history. So it's so much fun to play and so much fun for me. And I didn't know how much fun it would be for the audience, but it seems like they're picking up on it and they're enjoying it. And we'll see how much the fans respond to Bridget being back and how much the writers, and I have no idea, but I get very excited every time I get a script. It's literally like going home to like a family reunion for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did the doctor lingo come back to you? Easily or no?
Well, no. we had this really great, the writers wrote, I should make sure one of the writers knows this, because I hope he doesn't think I couldn't do it and we cut it. But again, it was a monologue that was kind of long and the show was long, so we had to like chop up a little bit. And they chopped up some of the dialogue that they didn't feel was necessary. But I was like, no, not that. I memorized that paragraph. I know how to say that. Oh, and it was like all very, very, very medically jargon-ish stuff. And I was so proud of myself that I worked on it so hard. Because I just was like, it was one of my first days back. I wanted Ed and Brad to know I could do it like I used to. And so I voice texted myself and listened to it in the car, you know, like the voice memo or whatever you call it, and really was very focused. As a matter of fact, I had my headset in and be in fives, and I would walk around and say it out loud, and people were like, what are you doing? Are you on the phone? I'm like, no, it's my medical jargon. It's coming up next. And then they cut it, and it was Jennifer Howard was directing, and she's like, Ash, you don't have to say all that. I'm like, no, I can say
I know it all.
I can say it better. How do you want me to say it? She's like, I don't want you to say it. We don't have time for you to say it. I was like, oh, okay. But it didn't come back that easily. It's, again, a testament to like shows like Grey's Anatomy. It's a muscle you have to learn, but it's every time you get there, it's stuff we don't usually say in our daily life. So it's different.
That's pretty funny. Well, Ashley, as remarkable as this is, this year actually does mark the 25th anniversary of your entree into daytime television, which means
is it really?
It really is.
Oh, really, my gosh. Wow.
I know. That's, it's crazy. Wild.
I didn't realize that. Wow. Thank you for telling me.
It's a pretty amazing milestone. Obviously, you know, a through line of your career, but also just a part of this career that you've carved out for yourself in so many different genres. But before we let you go, can you try to sum up what being part of the daytime world has meant to you over the course of your career?
What I would have to say is a testament to Bill Bell. And he took a chance on me when I did not know much about anything, about life, about, you know, and he helped me pay for college and my first car. And I'm going to cry talking about it because he really gave me, he made sure I graduated from college and would rearrange schedules during my finals, and really taught me a lot about being a growing up and being an adult. And his whole family has been really great about that concept and that theme. And they're just a really great family. And he's, in my mind, the father of daytime in many ways. And if not the biggest way, or one of the biggest ways. And then his legacy is Bold and the Beautiful. And the fact that I am one of the few people, and there's a handful, but that have been able to have memorable characters on both shows is, I don't take that for granted. And so I grew up watching soaps, and then to get to do it when you're older, and then on top of just getting to like visit and get sweaty palms when you're meeting Peter Bergman and things like that, like I was able to create a career and make a life and meet people that will be with me for the rest of my life. It's a real family. And, you know, I have my family from Bold and the Beautiful was when I got divorced and had to find a new home. All my friends are amazing. I have an amazing support system, but my Bold and Beautiful family was literally here nailing shelves to the wall for my son and putting a bed together. And I wasn't on the show. I hadn't been on the show for months. It wasn't like, oh, they just saw me that day. It's just something that goes very, very deep, as we were talking about earlier. And it's a very special niche inside Hollywood. And it's, I know a lot of people get to experience it, but it's meant the world to me. And I hope that the soap genre is on for 50 more years, and that it's going to evolve and everything changes, but it's a very special thing. It's meant a lot to a lot of people, and to meet the people that watch it and the fans, and to hear things like, you helped, we watched you every day when we were in the hospital, or when I gave birth and I was home, like I looked forward to getting to see, you know, that half hour I carved out of my day, or that hour, or I was the CBS lineup people. And it's all very emotional and very cool. And I am so honored that everyone's wanted to watch our shows for so long and read Soap Digest and be a part of this journey. And we've been able to entertain people and touch people. So thank you for reminding me that it's been 25 years. It makes me kind of feel really special, to be honest.
You should. It's an amazing milestone, and you're still doing it. And that says and everything, I think. You
know? Let's hope. Yeah. Let's hope. I never take it for granted. I'm grateful every time I get a script in any genre, and especially in our little niche that we have here with the soap world.
Well, that's awesome, Ashley. We thank you so much for your time today. We're so happy you're back, as I mentioned, and we will look forward to seeing your other projects as they become known.
You guys, I'm so grateful for y'all. Thank you so much. And I'm always here if you have any other questions. And my last thing is just to the fans, if you got this far, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. We love you. There are no fans in the world like soap fans.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Ashley Jones for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.